You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast, presented by National Car Rental. Go national, go like a pro. We're giving you the best content from each episode of MLB At The Plate. MLB At The Plate airs weekdays from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern time on TuneIn. Now, here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and LaTroy Hawkins.
Welcome into the MLB At The Plate podcast. I'm Holden Kushner alongside LaTroy Hawkins. We start the podcast out with the MLB At The Plate triple play, where LaTroy and I discuss three topics that interest us. Start the triple play talking about the news that the Detroit Tigers have fired their manager, that the Detroit Tigers will not bring Brad Ausmus, their manager, back for the 2018 season. We also look at other managers on the hot seat as the season comes to a close. We'll move on to the Red Sox bullpen, highlighting closer Craig Kimbrell's season and starter David Price's move to the pen for the postseason. Finish up reminiscing about the 2007 Colorado Rockies and a team that LaTroy Hawkins was a part of as they made their run to the World Series.
The MLB At The Plate triple play.
I do want to start with some news from today, and Brad Ausmus is no longer going to be the manager of the Detroit Tigers after this year. The Tigers are 62-91 right now, and they tore things down throughout the season. And we kind of knew this was coming, right? They called a press conference earlier today. Brad Ausmus has had a nice run. They won a division championship, but Al Avila, their general manager, is going to go, and I guess the old cliche is a new direction at this point. So your thoughts on Ausmus and his time with the Tigers, because he, Matheny, every manager's under such scrutiny. I guess the fact that he never won a World Series, that's it. He could have kept his job longer. He didn't. And they're one of the worst teams in baseball right now.
Well, they're not one of the worst teams in baseball because of Brad Ausmus, I can tell you that much. They're worst team in baseball because of the decisions that some of the people in there, you know, who make the decisions around Detroit, you know, made during the season with trading guys and blah, 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 blah. But can't get into that. But, you know, Brad Ausmus, he's a good manager. I mean, he's an ex-catcher. He's highly intelligent. It just didn't work out. It just didn't work out for him in Detroit. Like you said, he took that team to the playoffs. He's had so many injuries. You know, the bullpen, when they were good, the bullpen wasn't that good, so they couldn't take that next step in the playoffs. And just a lot of things that played against him that, you know what, certain times of the season, he was still overcome. Wasn't able to overcome a rebuilding process in Detroit, and it's time for him to move on. He won't be unemployed for long.
No, and I just go back to his career as the skipper of the Detroit Tigers will end up being under 500. They're 312 and 325. But again, they're almost 30 games under 500 this year. So, you know, you take that out. And I think the one thing that kind of plagued him throughout his time there was that they just didn't have a closer. I mean, they never really had a shutdown guy. In 2014, listen, they won the division, and that was great. They had that horrible year in 2015, but bounced back last year, just missed the playoffs in a wild card race. But ultimately, you're right. I think that he is going to end up find a job somewhere, even if it's a bench coach for a little bit, or, you know, something else besides for the manager of a team. But let's talk about that a little bit more, because there are a couple other positions that are probably going to be open. The Atlanta Braves and Brian Snitker, they might be going in a new direction. And even though I disagree with it, I still think that the Mets are going to end up firing Terry Collins.
We both disagree with that.
Again, he's going to be the scapegoat for this bad season, not the training staff, not, you know, for everybody getting hurt and not being able to take care of the players, not the players themselves. You know, Terry's been a hell of a manager, longest tenured Mets manager there is. I don't know if Ausmus is going to be a fit in either one of those places, but let's talk about the other positions that may be open. And we'll start in Atlanta with Brian Snitker. Here's the guy that, you know, was playing, came up from the AAA. He was a AAA manager, and they didn't have a good season. I don't think anybody expected them to be anything more than a 500 team at best. I mean, that would have been the best case scenario, was the Atlanta Braves finishing up 500 this year, and that's obviously not going to happen. They're 68-83, but if they think that they can get over the hump next year, then they'll be looking around. And maybe Brad Ausmus is one of those guys. So maybe you could talk about the Atlanta job a little bit, and then Terry Collins and the Mets, because they're 65-87. Terry will be the sacrificial lamb, and that's unfortunate.
We'll talk about the Mets first, because you and I know that what Terry's done with his time in New York hasn't been appreciated by the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And when things went haywire, he was always making the right decision and making the best decision for that ball club to be successful. He never got credit for that. He doesn't get credit for being able to, you know, put out fires before they got started. Just think about all the stuff that we heard about that went on. Think about the stuff that went on that we didn't hear about. Tons of stuff. And think about Terry, how Terry just, he goes about his business. He could easily just lost it one day, because back in the day, TC used to be a hothead. You know, when I played for him in 2013, everybody, how is Terry Collins? He used to blow up like a man smoking at a gas station. He used to just blow up. So that's not him anymore. But I wish Terry the best, and it's unfortunate that he had to be with an organization that didn't really value what he actually brought to the table and is being a problem solver, a guy who can unite players, and, you know, just being a guy who stuck up for his players, his coaching staff, his training staff, and, you know, he took all the burden of everything that went on in New York.
Yeah, and he's not fired. I mean, he hasn't been fired yet.
Yeah, but we know they've been calling for it for 4 years now. Mm-hmm. It's eventually going to happen.
I'll say that run of the World Series, he had so much to do with that, just keeping a young team focused. And then I say one of the greatest managerial jobs, and I will never forget this, what he did last year with that skeleton crew getting into the wild card game after your three starters are going down. They had no DeGrom. Well, actually, Syndergaard was in. They had no DeGrom. They had no Harvey. They had Gazelman and Lugo coming up toward the end of the year. I mean, that was a tremendous job of managing. And you know what? I hope this isn't his last job. I hope that he gets another job. I really do hope that he gets another job. And if you can manage the New York Mets with the scrutiny they had, you can manage just about anywhere.
Anywhere,
right? So Terry Collins, if he does go, I really hope somebody picks him up. I really do, because I think he has a lot left to give the game.
He does. He has a lot to give the game, and he's a very good manager. And like I said, he has other qualities that go hand in hand with being a manager.
Yep. And then I don't know what the Braves are going to do in the offseason. They're going to need to revamp their pitching, though. They're starting pitching, so they're going to need help there.
Yeah, they need some help all around. But, you know, yeah. I see something on there. I see a coach on their roster, on their coaching staff, that we talked about how, you know, Brad Ausmus might not, you know, go right back into being a manager. He might be a bench coach and then end up being a manager again. And I was looking at this. I was looking at the coaching staff for the Braves, and I see Ron Washington is their third base coach.
Mm-hmm.
And why would they have to go outside the organization? If Brian Snicker has to go, Ron Washington is one hell of a manager. Mm-hmm. You know, all the teams that he's managed, and they don't have to go far to find a very good manager.
All right, so Ron Washington would be there. And the last guy I will say, and I really think the Nationals are going to get this done, but why the hell is Dusty Baker not under contract for next year? I mean, now there's no doubt about it. The Nationals do not pay their managers very well. You know, for the production, it's probably the best deal in baseball right now. What Dusty Baker means to the Nationals cannot be underscored. They're going to the playoffs back-to-back years for the first time in the history of the franchise, okay? Davey Johnson didn't do it. Matt Williams couldn't do it. He's actually back-to-back division title. So here's what I'll say about Dusty. This guy, I really hope he wins a World Series so we can put to rest the Hall of Fame debate. He's just a terrific manager. He's a player's manager. They love playing for him. And in the past, this Nationals franchise, when they've had all this talent, the second year, they have not gotten to the playoffs. Well, Dusty's got them in a position now maybe to get to a World Series. And who the heck knows what happens when you get to the playoffs. They need to win a playoff series for the first time. But Dusty Baker needs an extension. They need to pay the man. They need to do it.
Well, I'm with you. I look at Dusty as I always called Johnny Baker, my baseball dad. And like you said, he's a great manager. He's even a player's manager. He understands, and he understands both parts, both sides of it, from the front office standpoint, from a player standpoint. And, you know, that's one of his strong suits. But, you know, it's tough to talk about, you know, what they should give him one during the season. It's, you know, I don't know. Maybe they're waiting to see how far they get in the playoffs before they give him that extension.
Again, that doesn't make any sense to me. Fine, you can do that. But if you're not going to get there this year, who the hell is going to take you over the top? I mean, seriously, you can wait to see how far he gets you in the playoffs. But if they don't do it this year, I'm not putting it on Dusty Baker. Unless he just pulls a Buck Showalter and decides, you know, to do something asinine with his roster, like not putting Zach Britton from last year. I can't imagine Dusty Baker being the reason why they lose anything.
Well, they don't have a Zach Britton, so that won't happen.
They don't have that type of closer. But again, that's just some of the managerial moves right now. And Ausmus was the first to pay for his job today. And again, Atlanta, the Mets, and Wash, that's three teams in the same division where the managerial jobs are up in the air. I do have a hard time believing Dusty won't be back. In the Central, for the most part, I mean, maybe Matheny is on a hot seat. That team is in the mix, though. They've won three in a row, and they're in action right now. And Dexter Fowler had another base hit tonight. I mean, this guy is just killing the baseball. I don't see anything happening in the NL West. Bruce Bochy ain't going anywhere, is he? Unless he's done.
No.
Unless he doesn't feel good.
Unless he's walking away on his own.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't see anything happening there. Oakland, Seattle, Texas. I don't think there's going to be that many jobs open, and that's a good thing because you don't want to see people, you know, out there. I just think that there's going to be a few jobs, and Ausmus was the first guy. What do you think of the timing of this, of doing it in the final week and a half of the season? Just giving him a chance to play out the string, enjoy himself. What do you think about that? If you're a player and you got your manager fired, week and a half left, what are you doing? Is it uncomfortable playing for a guy? Or no?
No, you don't look at it that way. I mean, you look at it as if, you know what? We went to battle with each other, and at the end of the day, it just didn't work out. I played 21 years. I had one manager to get fired during the season, and that was Cecil Cooper in 2009 in Houston. And I felt so bad because ultimately I was part of the reason he was released. I mean, released. He was fired. So if that doesn't make you feel some type of way, you're not a grown. You're not a man. You are a child playing a grown man's game. But it made me feel some kind of way when Cecil Cooper was relieved of his duties, you know, during the season. And, you know, I was one of the only players to go in the office and actually talk to him about it. Because I felt like I had to, because I felt bad, because I knew we hadn't played up to our expectations, and we're the reason, ultimately the reason why he got fired. He didn't go out there and throw a ball. He didn't did a hit. He didn't steal a base. He didn't block a baseball. He did none of that. So it plays kind of heavy on your mind, but you always say, you know what? It just didn't work out. It's part of the game. Believe me, if you're hired, there's a good chance you will be fired.
Yep, at some point in time, it happens in a lot of different industries, and it stinks, but you move on to the next one. 5-4, the final score. The Red Sox beat the Reds. So now with the Yankees loss, the Red Sox magic number to clinch the East is 6. They can smell it, and there you go. So a nice win here for the Red Sox. Kimbrel comes on and shuts the door, and this guy is something else. You know, I got to ask you, because being a former closer, who's the best in the game? For me, there's two guys. It's either Kenley Jansen or Craig Kimbrel. I don't know what kind of numbers you want. I don't like ERA very much. What's the number one stat that you looked at when you were a reliever? What's the one stat you wanted to see?
How you did when the game was on the line. How many saves you had? Because you know, a lot of times you go out there and you pitch and getting some work in, and games that you're way up or you're way down. And you give up runs, but, you know, what about when the game's one-run league, a two-run league, a three-run league, or the game's tied when you're at home and you have to pitch, how you do? So that's right. More what I pay attention to. And, you know, this day and age, you know, more and more information we get the strikeout.
And well, then that's – well, Kimbrell's got 121 Ks in 65 innings.
Oh, God, Jesus.
All right, and that's not including tonight. And then Jansen, Kenley Jansen, has 102 Ks in 65 innings. But Jansen has only walked 7 batters all year, where Kimbrell has walked a whole 14. I mean, these guys are doing some remarkable things right now this season. These two guys, if you look at ERA, and again, it's not very good for relievers, it's not a good judge of it, but a 1.25 for Jansen, a 1.38 for Kimbrell. The blown saves, Kimbrell's had 4, and Jansen has had just 1, so I think that's interesting, say the least. If you take fielding out of it, the xFIP.
Oh, God, stop.
It's the same thing. It's 1.23, 1.2. They are so similar in so many ways.
Bad average.
You get more Ks with Kimbrell, and you get less walks with Jansen.
You get, I mean,
these,
bad average,
these two guys are the best.
It's 1.31 for Kimbrell, and hits to innings pitch is just off the charts. Mm-hmm. Just off the charts. And half of Kimbrell's runs have come off of home runs. He's given up 5 home runs. He's given up 10 earned runs total for the season. That's pretty dominant. And coming off the knee surgery, he's definitely pitching like, you know, the guy that the Red Sox traded for.
So who's your guy, Kimbrell?
I'm going with Kimbrell just because I know Kimbrell and
just because of your personal relationship.
A personal relationship. But I have to throw this out there. You can't go wrong picking either guy. You can't go wrong. And you look at the more – if you look at the walks, Jansen has 7 walks for the season.
7.
Kimbrell has 14.
That's pretty
Kimbrell's
good
given up 29 hits in 65 innings. Jansen's given up 41 hits, so they pretty had the same amount of base runners, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's given up 10 runs, 9 earned runs, 4 home runs. So they're so similar, but the batting average against is probably 30, you know, almost 42 points higher for Jansen. Just crazy. You can't go wrong with either guy.
Yeah.
Go wrong with either guy.
I'll tell you this much. Both of these guys will be pitching multiple outs, like multiple innings probably in the playoffs. Hey, we saw it with Jansen last year, the way Kimbrell's throwing right now. But let's also look at David Price. Now, he left a couple of base runners on. He threw 2 2/3 shutout innings tonight. So this Red Sox thing is getting very interesting. You can roll Sale out. I'm not sure if a number 2 is going to be good enough to hang with the Indians, but I mean, we'll see. Before the Indians went on this run, the Red Sox and the Indians split 4 games. It was the last game of that series that the Indians won that started the 22-game win streak. But wow, the X factor here right now is David Price. And if he can get you 6 to 8 outs in the playoffs here, maybe a couple of times in a series, that's a game changer, LaTroy.
That is a game changer. Yeah, 6 to 8 outs is a lot of outs, those big outs in the in the playoffs. And you know what? I mean, just let's give him a chance to settle in his next 3 or 4 outings out of the bullpen, and then we'll assess him again heading into the playoffs, because pitching out of the bullpen is completely different than starting, and guys like him have definitely excelled at it. But at the bottom line is the Red Sox didn't pay him $200 million to be coming out of the bullpen.
All right, but they're going to.
They're
going
to have to for now, but it's not going to be long term.
It's not going to. No, no, no.
No,
it's
no.
For the playoffs.
Just for the playoffs. But
yeah, it's for the playoffs. What was it? 10 years ago, you and the Colorado Rockies were in the midst of winning 21 out of 22. I can't believe it's 10 years ago, but I was hitting you up. What was it? Last week, you guys had your reunion in Denver.
Last weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It was a good time. Get a chance to see my old teammates from, you know, that 21 out of 22 run, and you know, that's back-to-back sweeps to get to the World Series. It was a good time to see a lot of the guys.
What do you remember with about 10 days left in the year? 9-10 days left in the year. Do you remember anything specifically about your charge to the playoffs that year?
I remember that all we had to do was keep winning, and there was a very good chance, a high percentage, that we still wouldn't make it in. If we won out, we still wouldn't have made it in, because San Diego was playing against Milwaukee. Milwaukee wasn't good. You know, they wasn't that good yet that year. San Diego was. And I remember we got in only because Tony Gwynn Jr. hit the triple off of Trevor Hoffman to tie the game, and then he eventually scored. So that's how we got in, because Tony Gwynn Jr., whose dad played with Trevor Hoffman, who had, against the team he grew up watching and falling in love with, he gets a hit that sends the Colorado Rockies to the play-in game and eventually to playoffs in the World Series.
So, you look back at that run there. Was there any point in time when you thought the season was over before you went on 21 out of 22?
No. Coming out of spring training, we knew we had a good team. I didn't say we had outstanding. We knew we had a good team. It's just like the first 3.5 months, 4 months, we just couldn't get it together. When we were swinging the bats great, we wasn't pitching well. When we were pitching well, we just wasn't swinging the bats great. So it's just things never lined up. But, right after the All-Star break, you started to see that, some of those games became a little closer. And we were hitting, we were pitching a little bit better. And then we started to win some of those games. And then we started to really pitch and really swing the bats very well. And everything just came together at the right time. And that's how we were able to go on that crazy run. But being there last weekend, celebrating winning 21 out of 22 was right in the middle of when the Cleveland Indians won 22 straight. So it was like, wow. Sitting back thinking about it, what we did 10 years ago, and actually watching the Cleveland Indians do it, at that present time, we were like, well, I guess what we did was pretty impressive.
It was really impressive. I mean, because you came out of nowhere. I remember being at the World Series that year, and you get out, and listen, it all came down to a crashing halt against the Boston Red Sox, and that team was just on a mission. But
The stars aligned up for them. The stars aligned for them.
I was there. I was at every single one of their playoff games.
The stars aligned for them.
I was covering that team over there. They were down 3-1 to the Cleveland Indians.
Yep.
And the Indians had a chance to close them out. They didn't, and then the Red Sox didn't lose again. They went out, and they won 7 in a row, last four against you guys. That team was on a roll, man. But I want to go through the National League
side. We were a victim of our own success that year because we swept, and we set for 9 days. Mm-hmm. So we were a victim of our own success that year. It was
all right, give
that was
me,
bad.
Give me the wild card game, the atmosphere there, right through the final pitch.
Oh, it was incredible. I remember two things about that game. I remember pitching in the 7th inning and striking out Khalil Green. Mm-hmm. And I remember Jorge Julio, a good friend of mine on the team at the time, he gave up a home run to Scott Harrison, Jerry Harrison's brother, and they took the lead. That's it. The rest is a blur, man. The rest is a blur. I kind of remember Hoffman coming in the game, coming out of center field, running to the mound, and that was it. I don't remember much, and it was just a crazy, it was pandemonium, man. It was fun. I was telling my wife, I was like, I remember taking 2 Ambien on the plane because it was a late game. And we had to fly to Philly, so that was a 3.5-hour flight from Denver. And they were already 2 hours ahead of us. So we didn't land until 7:30 that morning. And we had a 4:30 meeting. So before we landed, I took an Ambien. I was like, so I wanted to sleep until about, 2-3 o'clock. It didn't kick in. So I took another Ambien.
Oh, no.
I know. And I woke up at 4:10 that afternoon with my suit still on. My socks, my shoes, my watch, and my ring were in the sink.
Oh, my God.
And I had no clue how I got to my room. I don't remember getting off the bus. I don't remember getting on the bus. Don't remember getting off the bus. I don't remember walking into the hotel, getting my key, pushing my floor on the elevator. I don't remember walking to my room. I made it, though, safe and sound. That's all that matters.
Yep, and everything worked out. And then the league championship series, the clincher.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun because, we went in there and, Philly is that town. They were pretty excited about their Philly team, and they had a good team. But we were just playing so well. We just had a lot of momentum going in, and I think in that first game, Cass Matsui, our second baseman, hit a grand slam. And Francis, started for us, our big lefty. We called him the baby giraffe. Mm-hmm. And he started for us, and man, he just went out there and he just dealt. It was just everything was aligned for us those first two series. We swept them, and then we moved on to the Diamondbacks, who we had a lot of experience with because they're in our division. And, you know, we just, you know, went through them. And what I remember about that series, I was facing Tony Clark with a man on second base with two outs. And Tony Clark, who was the Major League Baseball Players Union head guy now, I threw my inside fastball. I missed my spot, and he hit a ball in the right center field gap. And we had him, Willie Taveras was playing center field. We had him shaded towards left field, and Willie could fly. And I'm sitting there like, uh-oh, I made a bad pitch, and Tony made me pay. And out of nowhere, here comes Willie Taveras diving for that ball and catches it. And you see me turn around, and I just throw my hands up in there like, whoa, did that just happen? That's the only thing I remember about that series.
That was a great run. Well, let's just face it. One of the great runs you're going to see, and it's something that the city of Denver, really that whole region, even up into Wyoming, is not going to forget that run.
You're listening to the MLB at the Plate podcast, presented by National Car Rental. Go national, go like a pro. And we'll be right back with more after this. There's hits, and then there's all-time rock classics from the 60s and 70s. With classic rock hits on TuneIn, relive the very best sounds that defined an entire generation. If I ever get out of here, thought of giving it all away. Listen to the greatest rock songs in history with classic rock hits on TuneIn. So you think you can stop me and spit fire. And now, time for more of the MLB at the Plate podcast, presented by National Car Rental. Go national, go like a pro. Now, here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and LaTroy Hawkins.
Our 15 games on Friday to bring you up to speed on all the action. We got the best day ever, Home Run Tracker, and statistically speaking.
Best day ever, presented by National Car Rental. Go national, go like a pro.
Who's your pitcher tonight, LaTroy?
I guarantee you and I picked the same guy.
Okay.
Justin Verlander.
All right, I picked two guys, just in case you went with Verlander, so go for it.
I picked two guys, the best day ever, for hitters, just in case you pick one of those
guys. Okay.
All right, I'm going with Justin Verlander, 7 innings, 1 hit, 2 base on balls, 6 Ks. He dominated a pretty decent Los Angeles Angels team, and he's been nothing but short of fantastic since the trade over to the Houston Astros.
Yeah, I was going to go with Verlander, but my other guy was, how about Marco Estrada? Your boy, Marco Estrada.
That was my other guy, too.
7 innings, 3 hits, a run, and 4 Ks, and he really hurt the Yankees' chances to win the American League East tonight, and he sends them 4 games behind the Red Sox. Marco Estrada just signed the deal. This is literally his best day ever. He signs a deal. He gets a win. Congrats to Marco Estrada. He's coming back to the Blue Jays next year. Let's move
Marco
to the other side.
Marco Estrada.
At the plate.
My best day ever at the plate, and you know, I'm going back and forth between Yulieski Gurriel, and Byron Buxton. But you know, I'm gonna have to go with Mr. Buxton. He was 3 for 4 today with 2 doubles, 2 RBIs. His batting average raised to .256. July the 15th, when he came off the DL, he was hitting .218 with a .292 on base percentage. In July, he hit .387. August, he hit .324. He's cooled off a little bit in the month of September. But since the All-Star break, he's hitting .303 with a .354 on base percentage. And that's my best day ever as a hitter. Byron,
I feel like
Buxton.
It was pretty cut and clear because those were the two guys for me, too. And I will go with Yulieski Gurriel.
Great minds think alike, brother.
Yeah, I just think it was clear watching these games tonight. Certain players stood out. And Gurriel hit that big 3-run home run in the 7th. So what you had was Verlander and Garrett Richards both throwing 6 shutout innings of 1-hit baseball. Yusmeiro Petit came in for the Angels. 2 on, boom. Gurriel took it out. Only run scored in the game, and the Astros picked up the win. So let's go Yuli Gurriel there. And now let's look at all the home runs.
MLB at the plate, home run tracker.
My longest home run ever at Rogers Center in Toronto was hit tonight by Aaron Judge. That ball went 469 feet. Aaron Judge, 46th home run. Teoscar Hernandez, Max Kepler, Travis d'Arnaud, Nick Castellanos, all going deep. Scooter Gennett hit his 4th Grand Slam of the year. Wilson Ramos of the Rays hit a couple, including a grand slam. Chris Davis, Rafael Devers going deep. Russell Martin of the Blue Jays hit one 375. Brett Phillips, Stephen Vogt, Adam Lind, a three-run blast. Kurt Suzuki, Evan Longoria, Travis d'Arnaud, and Alcides Escobar all going yard. Ian Kinsler blasted one 390. Ryan Goins, 385. Matt Davidson. Marcell Ozuna had a pair. Brian Dozier hit one 395. Kinsler, 390. Ryan Goins grand slam went 385. Kurt Suzuki goes deep again. Justin Bour, Yuli Gurriel's shot went 407. Shinsu Chu, 348. It was Giovanni Ursula. Ian Desmond goes deep. Cody Bellinger, that record setter, goes deep. Marcell Ozuna's two home runs. So the first one went 434. The second, 391. Then Nolan Arenado goes 378 feet. Let's look inside the numbers.
Statistically speaking.
There was like this specter that was whispering, statistically speaking, before this. It was amazing. I don't know who it was, LaTroy, but good stuff. So, Aaron Judge's 469-foot home run, second longest of his career. And he's three away from tying Mark McGwire's rookie record of 49. Scooter Gennett, first player in Major League history to have a four-home-run game and hit four grand slams in one season. All right. Justin Verlander has now won his fourth straight start since joining the Astros. A lot of fours going on out there. With their win over Cincinnati tonight, the Red Sox are 14-4 in interleague play. Second best to the Dodgers, who are 16-4. Masahiro Tanaka, third pitcher in Yankees history to allow 35 or more homers in a season. First since Phil Hughes allowed 35 in 2012. What an interesting year Tanaka's had. LaTroy, he's had, you know, a couple games, 13 strikeouts, no walks, and he's given up a ton of home runs this season.
Yeah, he's...
So is everyone else, though, right?
True, and when guys are trying to hit home runs, they're sacrificing, you know, on-base percentage, trying to hit home runs, so that's why the strikeouts are up. I get that.
We got Matt Olson of the A's, the only rookie in Major League history with 16 homers in a 23-game span. Did that earlier tonight. And then Chris Davis with the Orioles, sixth season with 25 home runs, breaking the tie with Frank Robinson and Boog Powell, fourth most in Orioles history. That's it for the MLB at the Plate podcast. Be sure to join us on MLB on TuneIn at 7 Eastern each weeknight for MLB at the Plate. During the daily five-hour show, you can hear all of what you heard in the show, and you'll also have the chance to listen to the games and get the action as it happens. For Ryan and Dustin in the LA studio and LaTroy alongside me, I'm Holden Kushner, and we'll catch you Monday.
Thank you for listening to the MLB at the Plate podcast, presented by National Car Rental. Go national, go like a pro. Catch us every weeknight on TuneIn, where we take you around Major League Baseball with live listenings, analysis, player interviews, and much more. Plus, be sure to check out our other great content on TuneIn, featuring the very best in sports, music, news, and talk. On TuneIn, get caught up in the moment with more than 100,000 music stations and 5 million podcasts from around the world. Exclusive sports content, including live MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL games, and 24/7 news coverage from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio. Tune in, your everything audio app.